Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. When Andre Watts was in Philadelphia to play Beethoven's first piano concerto with the Philadelphia Orchestra, I sat down with him to talk about how his approach to this and other great works has evolved over the years. Andre Watts, you're a familiar face in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is familiar to you. You moved here when you were 8 years old and played when you were 10 with the Philadelphia Orchestra. It must feel like coming home.
Yes, I mean it feels on the one hand makes me feel old because there's a lot of years, you know, that have gone by in Philadelphia. But it's very nice. It feels comfortable, even though, you know, we're no longer in the Academy of Music, which is where it sort of began for me with this orchestra. But it's always nice. Look, it's a great orchestra. They play beautifully, and it's a good feeling on stage. Even there are many younger players, you know, many of the people that I knew when I was young are long gone, and it's a big pleasure for me, I have to say. Yes, thank you.
I was wondering whether playing great masters like this work, Beethoven's First Piano Concerto, is also like coming home, because it's familiar and you know all the notes, but every time you play it, it's different.
Well, yes, I mean, I wish that it would be, it could be an unalloyed joy, as it were, and because it is a great pleasure. But somehow these pieces don't actually, at least for me, get any easier. You know, you want more with simpler means. I'm not alone in this. I mean, many older colleagues and teachers and people like that talk about how you play the piece again and again, and you want to reduce the amount of curlicues and so forth and so on, but you want more internal content. And aiming for the combination of the two is really very difficult, I must say.
Can you explain what you mean by internal content?
Well, you sort of know what the music is saying at any given point, and you try to, it's weird, it's almost a contradiction in terms. On the one hand, of course, it's your job to bring that out. On the other hand, you try to get out of the way of that, not get in the way, which is pretty easy to do, to be in the way, you know. So, yes, you just try to project with as much simplicity and at the same time intensity as possible. And I think that makes, that's a challenge.
Yes. Is it kind of like exploring the personality of the piece, which would change with each orchestra and each performance?
Well, yes, tiny, small superficialities, of course, change day to day, minute by minute. But the basic, the bigger, larger message, major thrust remains the same regardless of orchestra or the day or whether you feel well or don't feel well, you know. You sort of know where the major contours should take you and what they should be, and you aim for that.
Well, this particular concerto is so exuberant. It's difficult to listen to it without smiling, particularly in the third movement.
Yes, in the last movement where he suddenly went to Mexico or something. God knows. You know, I've never actually read anybody explaining where did he get that? Because you don't have it in any other pieces of Beethoven. Suddenly it's like Tico, you know? I mean, interesting.
And it really feels like a dialogue. Well, the whole work feels like a dialogue between the orchestra and the piano. Even in the first movement, before you come in, it's as if the orchestra is saying, the piano is coming, the piano is coming.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, how wonderful. That's a great way to think of it. And I feel that that's what, you know, Beethoven meant also. And it is like many, many concertos. Most concertos really are just large chamber music. Just, you know, larger forces and maybe more of a solo virtuoso turn on the part of the soloist than you would have in a trio or in quintet, although not necessarily. All concertos really are a fair amount of chamber music, but this one in particular, and in the slow movement, you know, this incredible dialogue with the clarinet, which is really one of the most glorious passages in the literature.
Could you talk a little bit about the cadenza in the first movement? Are there choices that you make?
Yeah, there are choices. I mean, you don't have to play Beethoven cadenzas either. You could make up your own, or other great pianists have written cadenzas. Beethoven has, I believe, two cadenzas for the first movement of this concerto, and I start with the lesser played one, which is a shorter cadenza, but then I switch over to, I end with the ending of the larger cadenza, but they're both by Beethoven.
Oh, but you combine them.
Yes, right.
Why did you do that?
Well, I liked the beginning. I liked the idea of a shorter cadenza for this movement. It's a very, very big movement. So I like the idea that it's shorter. I like the way it begins. But I like the ending of the other cadenza, the way it leads back to the tutti and to close the movement is pretty spectacular. So I just needed to find a way to get to it. So I found some bar where I could segue into that, and it seems to work.
That's terrific. So over the course of your career, have you changed the way you approach Beethoven?
Wow. Well, first of all, I guess the reflexive answer would be I hope so, because, you know, you hope that you've matured to some degree and that means things change. You know, a long time ago I had an interesting conversation with George Shandor. People called him George Shandor, who was a great pianist, you know, and premiered the third Bartok piano concerto. And I actually heard him play it with this orchestra in Normandy. Obviously not the premiere. Anyway, I had a conversation with him, and he said to me, he said, well, you know, you don't really play any differently now than you did when you were 10 years old. And I, you know, immediately, of course, this is many years ago, and I had a big reaction, and I said, how can you say that? And he said, no, take it easy. Of course, I know you play better, and you know more things and whatnot, but the basic thrust of your music making is probably the same. It's not as nothing is 100%, so this is not 100% either, but 99%, people who are by nature and if you want to say by birth, extrovert players don't become introvert and vice versa. So that your general attitude towards the music probably remains the same. Your general idea, what interests you most, what direction you want to go in the most vis-a-vis playing for the public, what you want to project, what the balance of importance is for internal, external, that probably doesn't change so much with the passage of years. You know, I think what changes is, I don't mean to be flogging a dead horse, but, you know, trying to be expressive with a little more simplicity. I think that, appropriately, when you're very young, everything is fancier and things have curlicues and everything is, every moment of drama becomes a moment of high drama. When you get a little bit older, and of course, wonderful players when they're young understand early on that, every climax in the piece is not the major climax. I mean, everything is not a major pronouncement. There are lesser pronouncements. And because the lesser pronouncements are treated as lesser pronouncements, the big ones really have meaning. And that's more difficult to, it's more difficult to do that with conviction. When you're young and hot-blooded, you know, than when there's a little more maturity. That's why, of course, when you encounter very, very talented children who seem to have this kind of wisdom, that's what is so startling about certain child prodigies that you think, my God, that's the playing of an adult.
What do you think about the world of classical music today with the way delivery of music is changing? I know in conservatories, students of music are learning new things and learning things beyond the music because it's a changing world. What are your thoughts about the future of classical music?
Well, I think the future of classical music is okay. I'll tell you one of the things now that I'm older that I think very strongly. I think it's very dangerous when you get, it depends on your personality, of course, but, you know, you start to get over 50, 60 years old, and, you know, you have a lot of backlog of experience, and the world has changed a lot. So classical music is different, and it's too easy to look askance at new, different attempts to reach listeners. I say this really seriously because, for example, I dislike projections. I dislike screens on stage. I dislike many things that possibly are not bad. That might be good. You know, I try to remain open-minded. I certainly think that there's clearly health. The state of classical music is healthy despite, you know, labor disputes and orchestras folding and financial difficulties and so forth and so on. And then the proof of the health is that people are constantly looking for how can we make this music reach more people and how can we continue getting new audiences. So this is, I think, very positive. You know, you don't have to agree with every city you go to has a different take on how we're going to get more audience and different orchestras have different ways. You don't have to agree with the minutiae and the details of everything. Just the idea, the aim is wonderful, and that's very positive.
That's great. Thank you very much, Andre Watts.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.